Welcome to The Assignment. In this podcast, we'll listen in as associates from across the firm have candid conversations, share stories, and answer questions about how they've navigated the topics of inclusion and belonging, both here at Buckingham and in their homes and communities. We hope that this podcast will empower everyone listening to be courageous, curious, and engaged when it comes to conversations about identity, and that we'd all be able to come together to share a little bit about ourselves and our experiences. That's the key to growing our relationships and making an even greater impact in the work we do each day. So I think at this point, we'll probably start pivoting a little bit more into some of those personal questions. We've talked a lot about Buckingham to this point, which is good. And of course, why we're here. We want to make the firm better, more inclusive, a place where everyone feels like they belong. But I mean, a really important part of that is looking inward too. So we talked about before we can go into communities, we have to get Buckingham in order. I think before we go into Buckingham, we have to get ourselves in order. So more inward focus. Have you given any thought to your own identity and how that presents at Buckingham, or how that presents outside of Buckingham? How does it affect how you show up as a leader?
Yeah. Listen, it's a tough question to answer. On the surface, to almost everybody, I'm a really attractive young... No, just kidding.
Full head of hair.
Full head, yeah, great. On the surface, I'm a white male.
Yep.
Okay? But I got scars too, right? We all have our own experiences. We all have our own insecurities. We all have our own comfort levels about various things. And I'm not immune, you know, from that either. I like to think of myself as an enlightened person. But I know that I am, generally speaking, categorized as a white male who thus doesn't understand. And that hurts. It hurts me as somebody who wants to create an organization where everybody feels safe and secure and comfortable. So it's made me think a lot about how I present, how I engage. And again, I don't want to pretend that I have conclusions or solutions. But I try to be more and more vulnerable about, you know, about my own story, about the things that have happened to me that I don't in any way pretend are necessarily identical or the same to those of others.
But it's not the suffering Olympics. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, right. We all have our own things. I would encourage just that we don't compare. Like,
yeah.
Well, it's not as bad as yours. Like, that's almost irrelevant. Like,
I love that phrase, the yeah. Suffering Olympics. Great.
Yeah, I think the actual phrase is the oppression Olympics.
Okay.
I think that's because we talk about, yeah, well, you know, such and such group doesn't suffer quite as much as them because they went through slavery and these, like, yeah, that's not, I don't know if that actually helps us where we are right now.
I don't
now.
Think it does. Yeah. But the point is that we can actually engage in conversations to understand people, understand the lens that they are looking at things through, understand the perspective that they may have and the experiences, and appreciate that and take it for all that, you know, the good that it is, and wrap it into something beautiful. That's the thing that I think, that I hope is different moving forward than it has been in the past, which is, it is that those backgrounds, those lenses, those experiences aren't weaknesses or scars or limitations or ceilings for any of us. There are opportunities, and there is value, and there is richness in each one of those. So again, we all have them. I think that's another thing, which is recognizing that and appreciating it and trying not to judge it. So
thank you for sharing. I mean, we're all broken people. There have been horrible things that have happened to all of us, horrible things we've witnessed that other people have gone through where we haven't known how to fix it. And maybe our job isn't to fix it, but to just be there with those people, to acknowledge that those things have happened.
I'll actually give you, I mean, I don't know that I've actually shared this, certainly not in a professional environment, but I will share with you one of my scars. And again, to your point, it's not comparison, it's not oppression, or, you know, Olympics or whatever the phrase is. It's just the kind of things that people may not know. Like, I had the privilege of going to Vanderbilt University, a top 20 university in the South. And to this day, I will tell anyone that it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. I met my wife there, some of my best friends. I got this incredible education. But I also have situations where 2 days into school my freshman year, I had somebody say, Bierenbaum? What kind of a name is Bierenbaum?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? So I had never experienced that before, or never experienced it quite like that before.
How'd you react?
I mean, the reality is I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. It made me feel unsafe. Like, here I am, 18 years old, on my own, lived this relatively sheltered existence, and 2 days into my college experience, I'm out in the real world. And here I am also, thinking I'm safe, right? I'm at this prestigious academic university, this institution that's supposed to be about higher learning, and the best of the best, top 20 school, great athletics, great academics, all this stuff. And that hits me, right? So can I go to the parties? Am I allowed at them all? Am I dressing differently? You're paralyzed. You don't know what to do and stuff. And I will tell you, it shapes for me the concept of, like, I had that personal experience at 18 years of age. I never want people to ever have that in an institution that I have any kind of leadership of. You know, again, it's one of those things that probably shapes a little bit of the work that we're probably now embarking on now for me, having that understanding, having that experience. And I wish I could tell you that it stopped there, right? That I haven't had other experiences and stuff. But again, we all have. And that's the thing, is I don't want anyone to have those experiences at Buckingham.
Have you ever been witness to, not necessarily at Buckingham, but seeing others being treated that way? And if you did, I'm sure you probably have, most of us have. How did you react to that? Did you step into the situation, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the answer is it's probably like so many times, it's hard to actually pinpoint one, which makes it that much sadder. It's usually around, I mean, when I kind of reflect, my guess is gender or color, where I've probably witnessed it the most. And the answer is, as I was younger, I probably didn't know how to behave. I probably watched it. I probably went over afterward and said, are you okay? Tried to care, tried to show that not everybody was bad. I would like to believe that today, I think that doing stuff after is weakness and a cop-out, and that I have, you know, developed an understanding, a confidence, a comfort level of hitting things, you know, head on. But I'm not perfect. There's still more I could probably do, you know, when I witness stuff like that, either in front of me or even from afar, you know, what we see in the news, you know, in the media. Quiet bystanders are unfortunately a big part of the problem to solving things and progressing things forward. And I should know that, right? I mean, my people were almost wiped off the face of the earth, you know, during World War II, because a lot of the world was quiet bystanders. And, you know, it is a very good question. It is a very good challenge. And I wish that I had a better answer for it. I should have a better answer for it.
I think think that was a perfectly acceptable answer. I think it was the real answer. It was the honest answer, and that's really all we're going for.
Yeah.
There isn't a right answer. There's a true answer.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate you giving the true answer.
Yeah, and again, I mean, just kind of reflecting on just our dialogue and conversation today, you know, if there's one thing, this isn't about getting to know Adam or Jordan or anything better. It's just, in my view, it's to show that these kinds of conversations are okay. They're okay to actually have at Buckingham. They're okay to have outside of Buckingham. And I think the more that we have these and that we understand each other, it's the path to a better world. And so, yeah, I hope that's what folks take out of this.
I hope so too. I hope so too. I do hope, though, that there's a certain level of getting to know Adam there, or getting to know Jordan, or whoever it is. Because once we develop those relationships and understand where people are coming from in the Foundations for Belonging, we talk about the iceberg, where you've got all the visible stuff on the top, but there's so much more underneath the surface that affects how people show up at work, or show up as a mother or a father or a spouse. And so without digging a little bit deeper to see under the iceberg, you're missing a lot. You're missing a lot, and you're not able to fully engage and fully appreciate the person across the table from you. So true, while that is maybe not the primary, is the sharing of the stories here, at least not for the assignment. And actually, you know what? I take that back. I think it might be. I really think that might be the primary, because it's the only way that we get to having the comfort, or developing the comfort, to take this to the next level.
Yeah. I'll go with that then.
Yeah. Did you have any questions for me? Is there anything that you've wondered about, or anything that, as we've talked today, or as we've talked over the past 9-ish months that I've been in this role and we've been working together, anything that you would want to learn more about, or that I haven't shared that you've been curious about and maybe we just haven't gotten to?
I've gotten to know you pretty well over the last 9 months as we've been working together. But one thing that I will ask is this. What fuels your passion for all of this work that you're doing now? You are volunteering countless hours, so much time, so much mental space. You are there for so many of our team members in such deep, caring, empathetic ways on top of a job. What fuels it?
There's a lot there.
Did I stump the interviewer?
I think you might have. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. Part of it is guilt that I didn't do this sooner, that I didn't pour into people more over the years. I've always had a deep sense of wanting everyone to have access, to bring everyone to the table. And I can't help but question things and wonder, well, why is it that we're doing it this way? Is this really the most equitable way? Is this really the smartest way to get all the different perspectives to be presented? And I have not done that well in my professional career. I just haven't, because I've been afraid to do that. Because again, I think I mentioned it earlier, but it feels so cliche for the Black girl to be talking about equity and inclusion. And so the question is, like, is that how you get pigeonholed, like, and stereotyped as the angry Black woman? Because that is, even if you don't present as angry, if you start to question things, or if you don't just go with the flow, sometimes people interpret that as anger just based on some of those biases that they have, some of the messages that they've internalized over the years. It's unconscious. They don't necessarily know that that's what's happening, but it affects then how they treat you. And I didn't want to be treated differently. I wanted to assimilate. I wanted to do my job and do it well, and hopefully people wouldn't notice that I was Black. That's awful. Like, that is not a way to create an inclusive space for other people. It might be a good way for me to get by, but it doesn't move the needle for anyone else or for my community. So yeah, part of it is feeling like this is my responsibility, and I haven't done it well to this point, and I'm committed to figuring out how to do it well moving forward. the other is that I just, even though I'm an introvert, can't say that I enjoy a lot of talking, but I do love people. And
it shows.
Oh, thank you. And I, this is the first place where I've worked. Not that the other places I've worked haven't cared for people, but there was something about a values alignment here where we cared not just about loving people well, but also developing systems to do that, developing systems to care for our clients well, to engage the community, being very evidence-based and data-driven in how we do what we do. I feel like that's been missing a lot, at least prior to when I came to Buckingham. And when I came here, it's like, oh, my people. Like, this is a place where I can not only be nerdy and create structures and frameworks for new ideas and new programs and things, but I can also do it based in a heart of wanting to improve people's lives, like to really make a difference, not just for clients, for the people who are paying us, but honestly, like primarily for our associates. I would say, if I'm being very candid, I care very much about our clients. We need them to drive the business forward. I care maybe twice as much about our associates because they are the ones who need to be well, who need to be safe, who need to feel like they belong in order to serve our clients well and in order to serve their communities well, our communities well. And so if they're not feeling cherished, if they're not feeling cared for, if they're not growing, we have no business, we have no clients. And so I would say that love for our associates is probably the other big thing that drives me to do this.
Awesome. I got two more.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I'll give you one more tough one and then we can end with something maybe a little more fun.
Okay.
All right. So we've talked about, I've referred to myself as the traditional white male. And, you know, let's also just be candid and direct, with a title, with perceived view of power and authority and stuff, just given my role. And you've referenced yourself as the Black woman. What do you think people would be interested in hearing about how that has actually worked? The two of us. We've been doing a bunch over the last 9 months together, right? You know, spent a lot of time, lots of conversations and stuff. Yeah. What would be surprising for folks to hear, given the perceptions based on those categorizations I just threw out? And what might be confirming even? What would be interesting for folks to hear? So again, I told you, one more tough one.
Yeah, I was a little more prepared for this one. I've thought about this. I've thought about this one before. I would say one of the surprising things would be that we think very similarly about things, despite the fact that, you know, I don't have CEO level experience, obviously. my knowledge of business is very green and junior in comparison to what you have done and what you've grown as the business is concerned over the years. But the values that drive how we operate in business, pretty darn close. Like, I think honestly, that was the thing that really pushed us into developing this partnership, was that you saw in my response to you last May, maybe, and I mean, correct me if this is off base, but just I've picked up as we've talked since then that maybe there was some alignment that you saw. And I was like, well, maybe it would make sense not just for us to partner on some of these things we both care about, on financial stability and literacy, on DEI, of course, but also on associate development, on professional development and leader development. We both care deeply and both are willing to run through walls to make these things happen. And so, I mean, I think that alignment there and what we care about and what's pushing us to do these things is very much spot on. I don't know, I'll leave you a moment to either confirm or deny if that was part of what led us to this partnership.
Yeah, no, I'd also say this, which is one of the things that I think, you know, might be helpful to hear is you continued to demonstrate courage, right? Which is one of the things I've always expressed to people, like I value the most, like people that sit back and don't have conviction about things. It's like wah, wah, wah for me, you know, kind of a thing. And I send out notes. You engaged. You took steps. You actually challenged some thinking and, you know, asked me questions and took the time. That was another element that I think we both share, which is just you have a choice in life. You can live a mediocre life, one that is safe, one that is comfortable, or you can take some chances. I think that that was one of the other things that I kind of saw in you was, forget any of those categorizations that, you know, I referenced beginning. It's just, you were just a human being that was willing to take chances for positive progress and intent. Like, that's something that just as a human being, I hope, like, everyone respects the crap out of. So. Oh,
thank you. Yeah. I think the other part of that is not every CEO is approachable or willing to be challenged. And I wonder, we talk a lot about titles being a thing that keeps people from engaging, from growing, because they're just too afraid to reach out to the CEO because he's the CEO and we have this vision in our heads of what a CEO is, and they don't know who Adam is. Yeah. They just assume that, oh, he's this, you know, very busy, untouchable guy with a tremendous amount of wealth who really just can't be bothered with my little problems. And if I tell him he's wrong, then I'm fired. And then, like, you know, yep. There's just all these thoughts that you have as you engage with people in higher levels of leadership. And one of my, it's both a strength and a weakness, is that if I feel like I have to say something and it's important, it's like, I can't just not do it, even if I'm terrified. It's like, I feel fear a lot. I have shared in a lot of different avenues around the firm of different talks and things that I've given, like, that I have suffered from anxiety. I've been medicated for anxiety, and not currently, but in the past, and had to figure out how to deal with that. But one thing about my personality is that no matter how crippling that anxiety was, I still had to do the thing that I felt convicted to do, even if I was scared to death. And I don't remember what the feelings were when I responded to you. Actually, no, there was a little bit of concern. It's like, man, this is kind of a long email, which, does he have time to read a long email? Probably not. But, you know, I don't have a way to shorten this. And I think it's still important that I share my reflections on what he reflected on as it relates to George Floyd, so that maybe next time we can say even more. Like, it's great that we said something, or that he said something as a leader in our firm, but, like, we could say more. He could say more. I could say more. I think a lot of people think it's like, oh, just being fearless. But it's like, no, you wouldn't need courage if you didn't have fear. Like,
yep.
So I would just say that, like, I struggle with being afraid and insecure and having all these doubts about myself and what I'm experiencing as I'm growing and learning more about our business and learning about myself as a leader. And I have to push past that, because that can keep you from really making an impact on your community, on the firm, on your family, you know?
I've told you a few times since we started working together, I'm not sure that anybody has ever gotten in trouble at Buckingham when they're of good competence and good character, right?
Yeah.
Now, that said, it's easy for me to say that, right?
Yeah.
It's another thing for folks to really believe that and step out in the face of, you know, of potential risk. And so I applaud you for it. So
thank you. Yeah, it is not without much labor every day, and without, you know, the occasional call or text to you or Jeff Reming or Wendy Hartman to say, am I screwing up? Am I all right? Is it all right? Like, can I trust you to tell me if it's all right? Because that is one thing that particularly women and women of color struggle with in corporate America, is like, the studies show that white males are much more willing to be candid and direct with other white males.
Yep.
Less so with women or with people of color, because they're afraid of, you know, well, am I going to look racist? Am I going to look like I'm being too hard on them? You know, and it's like, well, that in itself is a discriminatory practice. Like, if you're not willing to say the uncomfortable thing to make me better, like, you are keeping me from growing.
Yeah.
And what I have found in working with you, and working with, again, Jeff, Wendy, other leaders, Justin Ferry, like, just all of our board members this past year, is that this is a safe place to say, how am I doing? Am I measuring up to expectations? And if I feel like I get a softball answer from you, then I just press you harder.
Yeah.
And I know that there's not going to be any negative outcome from that. I know that my job is still safe. I know that our relationship is still intact. Even if we agree, disagree, if I've failed or fallen short, it doesn't change my standing or the way that you think of me. It's just like, okay, well, then you need to develop in this area and I'm going to help you do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a message I want people to hear.
It's funny as though that is something that I think people miss. Being safe and secure doesn't mean that you always feel settled.
Yeah.
And I am a huge, huge believer that everyone always feeling unsettled is actually the perfect state. Now, you can't feel unsafe or unsecure, but unsettled is different. Mm. Unsettled is, am I working hard enough? Am I producing enough results? Am I taking enough risks? Am I being candid and direct and open enough? Am I developing others enough? Like, that's not unsafe. That's not unsecure. That is a state of asking, am I doing my best? And being unsettled and constantly in a state of being unsettled is not the worst thing in the world. It is actually what is, I fundamentally believe, is required of an organization that wants an improvement, a betterment mindset. Because the moment everybody is actually settled, it's the point at which things stop progressing, stop moving forward with the care and the energy and the drive of what it takes. And that is how great organizations falter. So it's an interesting dynamic that we, like, you know, can talk about at some other point. But there is a huge, huge difference between safety and security and being settled. And I hope that distinction is kind of actually understood and appreciated and respected in this place. So, all right, last thing.
Yeah.
All right, we've talked a lot.
Yes.
Okay. You and Cynthia are the co-chairs of our DEI Council. How have we done in year one? How do you reflect? Has this been a good start? Good foundation, something you're proud of?
I think it goes back to actually the last thing you were saying about feeling unsettled. I feel unsettled. I do. I think it was a fine start. I think year one was exploratory. We were discovering what we need to do, how we need to do it, what the discomforts and the unease was across the organization of our people. Like, what do they actually need in order to feel like they belong? I think year one helped us clarify some of that. Did we make it as far on the roadmap as I would have hoped? No. But I also know that I'm kind of a taskmaster. I kind of have a plan, and it's like I want to work that plan. But I don't think that's the way this kind of work works. So,
well, let me give you some reflection and our listeners who made it maybe till the end of this.
Yeah.
We worked with an outside expert. The board bought in. We put together a roadmap. We put together a council. We put together priorities. We did Foundations for Belonging training for our board. We rolled it out now to our team leaders. We changed some of our hiring processes, right? We started important work on our promotion processes and our feedback processes and our compensation efforts, right?
Yeah.
We did volunteer work out in the community. We engaged our folks to help others. You all put out valuable, helpful, important messages to the organization, right? You all came to board meetings to make sure we were informed and engaged and updated on the roadmap progress. And we have set ourselves up now for 2022 and a number of efforts there. I think that's a good start. That's a foundation. That's the work that needs to be put in place in year one to set, again, a foundation for the future. I hope you, I hope Cynthia, I hope the rest of our council members, I hope this organization actually looks at that and says, huh, pretty good. Is it where we need to be? Nope. Is it where we want to be? Nope. Is it where we're going to be? Heck no. But it's a good start. And it's a real start. Not just words on a piece of paper or a social media post.
You're right. We have made it a long way. We've done a lot of things that are not maybe as visible to our community or even to everyone in the organization. But you put it well. We've started laying the groundwork.
You steered our philanthropic dollars to areas of social justice, equity, and equality, right? I mean, like, add all of these things up. I mean, I could probably keep going if you give me enough time.
No, but, we should probably wind it down.
Okay. I'll end it with this.
Sure.
Because this isn't just about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this is a lesson about life. Hmm. Okay? We've all just been through a pandemic. We were in our board meeting this week. Alex Potts said, we've been through a freaking pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And it hit me. He's not wrong.
Right? Yeah.
Like 1918, you know, last global pandemic that we all know about, right? Spanish flu, 18, 19 million people, you know, dying. Crazy, right? We just went through a pandemic too. But this is the thing about perspective. You can be on the front of the boat and look out and see how much of the body of water you still have left to traverse. And it can be disheartening. It can be depressing. It can be overwhelming. Or what can you do? You can take your butt to the back of the boat. You can turn around and you can see how far you've come from shore. And it's a completely different perspective. We at Buckingham have a different motor. We are always, unfortunately, at the front of the boat, looking out, questioning how much more we have to do, right? Questioning and challenging how much more we have to progress forward and focusing on all the problems and things in front of us. We do need to go to the back of the boat every once in a while, look back, reflect, and actually say, huh, shore's pretty far away now. Maybe we actually did some good stuff. Maybe we did actually do the hard work that pushed us just a little bit forward. And let's appreciate that.
This is why it's so important, y'all, to have mentors and friends and a circle of people that you have trust and faith in to give you that perspective. Because yeah, you're right. I'd spend a lot of my life, even pre-Buckingham, at the front of the boat. But just reorienting that perspective is huge.
It is.
It is huge. And it having is. People that are willing to hold the mirror up and willing to challenge the way you're thinking, that's huge too. So thank you for being that for me.
Oh.
And for so many of us around the firm. And thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed this first installment of The Assignment. There will be more. If you're interested in participating, if you have feedback, email us or email me, jdyson@buckinghamgroup.com or our DEI inbox. That's DEI@buckinghamgroup.com. Thanks again, Adam, for your time.
My absolute pleasure. It was an honor.
Thank you for listening to The Assignment. We hope you enjoyed our inaugural conversation with me, Jordan Dyson, and our CEO, Adam Bierenbaum. And we invite you to keep tuning in to hear even more of our colleagues share their insights and experiences. A few of our upcoming guests include Jeff Reming, our Chief Transformation Officer, Cynthia Chu, BSP's VP of Advisor Services, Wendy Hartman, President of BSW, and Lizzie Roberts, Associate Wealth Advisor based in Colorado Springs. I promise you won't want to miss these amazing conversations.